Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 62. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero. John's out this week, and so joining me as co-host is my friend, Mr. Pete Keeler. Pete, how you doing, sir?
I am good today, Pete. How are you?
I'm doing well. Pete, you've been on three times as a guest now, and now you're a co-host. Man, that makes you like an honorary member of the VSpeaking Podcast. So, hey, man, welcome officially to our team.
Well, thank you so much, Pete. I'm not quite sure if I can fill in the shoes there of Mr. John Nicholson, but I will certainly try.
Oh, you're going to do just fine, my friend. And this is actually in your wheelhouse because we're talking about performance. We're talking about SQL Server performance. And so I think that's something that you're kind of familiar with. So yeah, this will be fun. But before we do that, since John is gone this week, I thought it would be a great time to kick off our new game called...
Where in the world is
John Nicholson?
It's the global mystery. To watch and see.
Oh,
where in the world is
John
today? Where in the world is
John Nicholson?
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
Yes, I am profoundly dumbfounded as well. Where John is, the guy is, you know, he's always working. I don't want to give you the impression that he's slacking around, but John is out again. And so we're going to play a little game called Where is John? So, Pete, you don't have to play because I know you already know, but I have a clip. And so if you're listening to this podcast, I want to play this clip. If you can figure out where John is, send me an email at podcast@vmware.com. The first three right answers to this clue will receive a little gift from the Virtually Speaking Podcast. Sound like a plan?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, let's do it. So here's John's clue.
I just had an amazing mango lassi with breakfast. I mean, I know it's probably not the appropriate thing, but... it was delicious.
Yeah, so John had a mango lassi. Whatever that is, I'm not going to give any clues, but that's where John is. If you can give me your best guess. Don't Google. That would be cheating. But give us your best guess, and who knows? You might win yourself a little gift from the VSpeaking Podcast crew.
You know, actually, I think I might be able to play this game because even though we are supposed to know where John's at, sometimes I lose track anyway. And so I'm really not sure where he's at either.
Yeah, he's a globetrotter, man. He's in high demand. You know, he's the guy. So, John, we'll see you next week. But this week, we're going to start by playing a conversation that John and I had a few weeks back at VMworld with one of our great partners, Pure. There's a gentleman there called Arjunis Fernandez, really, really smart SQL guy. He's like one of those really high ranking. What do they call those? So like in Exchange, they used to call them the Exchange Rangers. You remember that program, Pete?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not quite sure what the equivalent is for SQL or all things SQL these days, but we just know that he's smart. So how about we go with that?
Yeah, he's like a SQL master databaser. We'll call him that.
Sounds good.
Yeah, so Arjunis is he's the kind of guy that you want on your team, and he's awesome because he doesn't just talk Pure. Like this is not a big Pure podcast. This is really a conversation around SQL Server. And so John and I were nerding out with him at VMworld, and we have a little piece of that conversation that we're going to share with you. And then Pete and I will come back and follow up with some commentary about SQL Server on VMware.
With reference architectures and solution, you know, design and things like that for SQL, and this is really true of any application. Do you feel that sometimes people just say, oh, it's SQL versus, you know, LAP, OLTP, you know, is this a database that, you know, a little old lady logs into on, you know, Sunday and runs a report, or is this, I mean, how do you communicate the uniqueness of everyone's environment?
It depends on who you talk to, right? And if you speak to a high level manager, they don't understand a data warehouse from an intensive OLTP application. They just don't. But, you know, if you go down, you know, in levels on the corporate ladder, you'll find that people that understand the differences on the different workloads, and some will actually appreciate more than the others.
And maybe just for our listeners here, just a quick kind of high level, can we break down OLTP, OLAP, and data warehouse, and what's kind of unique about sizing for those?
Right. So largely, there's like two different kinds of workload, but that's, you know, a very wild generalization.
Yeah.
So OLTP stands for online transactional processing. And that will be, you know, your banking applications and your finance applications.
Lots of writes coming in.
Right. So a lot of little quicks in and out of the database, so to speak, right? So your selects are going to be very punctual. You're going to fetch a couple of records and you're good. You know, the inserts are going to be very punctual as well. You have a couple of deletes here and there.
Punctual. I like that. Yeah. Punctual. Yeah,
so very quick.
I always said transactional there. That's a much better word. I'm going to steal that. So
yeah.
It's already been trademarked. You don't have to pay me licensing.
Well, John, I'm not surprised that that's new to you since you're never punctual yourself.
So. Oh,
that's quite funny, actually. So, and the other, you know, widely generalized range of workloads are the data warehouse and analytics kind of workloads where you see a lot more, you know, in bandwidth intensive operations, you know, as opposed to quick in and out of the database, you're going to be performing more scans, more aggregations, because you're going to be doing a lot more reporting and
transforming data sets or
right, that, so
pulling them in, throwing them somewhere.
That's another kind of workload that's ETL workloads, right?
Okay.
What you actually
ETL.
ETL stands for extract, transform, and load. So you actually fetch data from some source and put it into some destination.
That's where you start measuring in throughput, not IOPS, so to speak.
Right. So IOPS matters a whole lot more on the actual transactional side. They don't matter as much on the actual data warehouse side. On data warehouse side and analytics side, you care more about bandwidth than you do about IOPS, really. Because you're going to be, again, doing more scans. You get you want gigabytes per second rather than, you know, 100,000 IOPS or whatever, right?
But yeah, why do I care? Why don't I just buy a pure flash array, right? They're super fast. It's not going to matter, right?
All flash for days.
Oh, that's just the thing, right? A lot of people don't actually consider the implications of the actual workload has on their existing infrastructure and their current storage arrays. And it's interesting because in my job, I see all sorts of things, right? I see the people that really don't know what their workload even looks like. And they try to fix whatever problems they have with storage, and they just think that by buying storage, you're going to fix the problem.
Just throw money at it.
They don't actually understand. And this actually happened yesterday.
The effort we're filing flat all the flash at it, you know.
Yeah. And then they're pissed when it doesn't work and it's not fast.
But that's the problem. So yesterday, I was literally working with a customer yesterday that had this problem. The workload was not IO-centric. It was not an IO-bound workload. IO CPU-bound, memory-bound, IO-centric at all.
Yeah. The storage array must be broken because I don't see any work on it. You're not asking it for any work.
And then the account team is looking at me for inspiration, like, hey, can you save us here? Dude, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
I
can't fix it.
Wave your hand. Your performance problem is in another castle.
I can make it magically better, right?
Yeah.
But no, so these are the things of the trade that are kind of interesting to me. Like, a lot of people don't understand this. Also, another thing that's quite interesting to me is that people don't understand the access patterns of SQL Server in general, the database engine in general. They think that SQL Server uses a single IO block size of 64K, and that's it.
Oh, boy.
Which is the wildest hallucination that I've ever seen, right?
Yeah. 64K block.
But that's what they say. Because Microsoft says that you got to format your NTFS file system to a 64K allocation unit size. And that must mean that SQL Server uses a 64K IO block size.
Of course, yeah.
All IOs are that size. Yeah,
That's just a thing. So I spend a lot of time educating and telling people this. You know, I don't really have to talk about much about my employer's products because, you know, I just basically do a little education and then, you know, people go like, oh, okay, so that's why it's going to work.
Yeah.
So that works out pretty well for us in that sense.
At Pure Accelerate, you announced the new offering for FlashArray, right?
So we made a bunch of announcements on both the hardware side and the software side of Accelerate. You know, there were about 25 different software features that we announced. Not all are going to be released at the same time, but we did announce them. So some of them are actually GA already.
Yeah.
And so some of them actually come out with the next version of Purity, which is 5.0. It's scheduled to come out later this quarter or on next quarter. It's basically being... You know, it's on the oven. You can already smell it. It's about to come out.
I was glad to see you guys finally got a VVOL certification. You guys have been...
Oh, goodness gracious. Yes, I've been waiting for that for a really long time.
Yeah, you and me both, my friend. Right. People keep asking me.
I heard you guys talk about it for years. Where's Pure?
It's a pain in the butt when they have to tell customers how to do snapshots and clones of massive data stores and when they only need a couple virtual disks that are sitting inside of that.
Yeah.
It's just a pain. And the amount of scripting they have to do. And, you know, we all can agree that ESX and vSphere in general... Not very friendly toward refreshes of in snapshots because you have to rescan and resignature, and those operations can take a really long time depending on the version of vSphere that you're using. So if you're using V5.5, you're going to be waiting 20-30 minutes for your entire cluster to scan on your VMFS volume, right?
If there were two words that could be used to sum that all up,
let me think. Would it be
snapshots suck?
Yeah, John and I did a session at VMworld last year called Snapshots Suck. That was.
not really appreciated by the corporate office.
It's true, though. I mean, the model is not really friendly toward that.
Yeah.
And so Beeble actually changes that because our implementation of Beeble is just physical volumes in the array. So you can snapshot and clone them separately, and then, you know, they can be managed snapshots or unmanaged snapshots, and they work exactly the same.
Oh, yeah. vSAN changed snapshots significantly, and VMware has with vBols as well. So pure. If you're taking a snapshot on a vBol, it's going to essentially offload it immediately to the array. So we're not talking the old VMFS
Everyone stopped doing VMFS snapshots. Stop doing even Sparse SE, which is technically the new format that everything's in as of 6.5, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, just stop doing it. Move to vBols and vSAN. Get out of that.
Life is so much easier.
Ugh.
You know, there was a time when virtualization, everyone was like, well, yeah, we'll virtualize some workloads, but not SQL. So are those days over? Are people finally virtualizing SQL, in your opinion?
So pretty much everyone that I speak to is running a virtualized workload, a SQL workload already.
Okay.
And the ones that haven't fully migrated the entire workload to virtual, they're considering it, and they're doing so in the very near future.
Is it a performance thing, or is it?
It used to be a performance thing, right? So remember, when we had the whole problem with SCSI locking, you know, before ATS was a thing, right? That was a problem.
Well, back in the Stone Ages, before multi-packing was that.
But these are myths that kind of persist.
Right.
It's hard for people to get rid of those.
Oh, you need to do RDMs to get good performance. I'm going to brain the mic if I hear that again.
Like people say, oh, I'm going to get 1.5% or whatever better performance. And I look at them like, kidding me.
if you were 1.5% away from missing an SLA, you were cutting it way too close. You know,
exactly what I tell them. But
I was like, wait a minute, you architect with that thin of a margin?
Yeah. Like, people are really stubborn, man. And so the word of mouth that goes out is, as any bad rumors about any technology, they are really, really, really pervasive. So things linger for a really long time.
Well, I mean, we used to have the server huggers who would hold out against compute virtualization, and then now we've got like the LUN huggers who are like, got to have as little things in the IO path as possible. But vBols cuts through that. So
it does. It does. Yeah, I'm really excited about our implementation and seeing a lot of customers migrate to that. We already have our customers in beta enjoying the benefits.
Yeah, I've been playing with it for a while with Cody, and it's pretty stable. Really excited about it. I know you guys haven't got it officially certified yet, but I know it's like a hairline away, and it's really stable. So
it's about to cross the line. So
yeah, very cool. There.
But to your point, I don't see a reason why anyone wouldn't virtualize the SQL Server workloads today. I think I have seen probably two or three instances in my entire career where you really needed physical hardware.
You know, I've got 500, people are like, I got 500 gigabytes of throughput required for my, transforms. I'm like, all right, so you're running a mainframe, right? Like, okay, fine, whatever.
Even that, I've seen massive VMs running, multi-gigabyte per second workloads.
Yeah.
Millions of IOPS kind of thing. No problem.
Performance is increasingly, just in general, it's the amount of questions of, can I virtualize this? Performance is becoming just such a small concern point for conversations.
Yeah, the most important thing is really portability and making things easier in your data center. And if you're fixing yourself to physical hardware and how we used to do things in 1983, you're in for a world of trouble down the road.
Oh, yeah.
People still suffer from that.
We saw a quick fad there for a sec where everyone said it was going to be containers on bare metal, but I think that's finally died down. I hear unikernels. That's what all the hipster DevOps kids are going to go to next.
Yeah.
Call me when Microsoft does live patching, but anyway.
Exactly.
It's not happening anytime soon.
All right.
Who knows?
Actually, Microsoft did live patching in 2003. They deprecated it and removed it because it could be used for viruses to attack the kernel.
Yeah, Microsoft has attempted a lot of things. You remember the POSIX interface to Windows NT? We're actually leveraging it now with, you can actually run Bash on Windows. So you basically run a Linux kernel on top of Windows. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is.
There's some things that didn't quite work in the past, yet they were baked into the operating system. I'm starting to use them again.
This is what I love about talking to some of these pure guys. There's some hardcore nerds over there. Cody, Arginus. Yeah, you guys got a good crew. Next time Cody comes on the podcast, you should join him.
Definitely will. I'll be delighted to.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy
thanks
the rest of the
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so that's Arginus Fernandez over at Pure. So check him out. He is on Twitter at dbarginus, appropriately. So yeah, go ahead and check him out. But yeah, so Pete, I'm curious. Now, one of the things Arginus shared with us, he talks to a lot of customers that don't really understand that it's not always the storage that's the problem, right? you know, customers will come to them and say, oh, we have a performance issue, but their workload's barely touching the storage. It's not an IO issue, you know, and then he has to train even some of his own colleagues that, hey, this is a network issue or whatever. So have you ever had any experiences where storage was the culprit, if you will?
Yeah, in fact, Pete, that rung all too familiar with respect to what he was focusing on there in terms of that it isn't always necessarily the storage. I think what I had learned in my time in operations was that while it certainly could be an area that was the primary cause, what it would often do is that it would expose the inefficiencies that would occur at the various layers within the stack.
Yeah.
So I recall in one case, I was managing a SQL cluster, and at first glance, it really did look like a storage performance issue. And I was able to apply faster storage for those series of servers. But as it turned out, it was some very inefficient stored procedures that were running at these mixed intervals on all of the SQL servers. And,
yeah,
and so even just throwing that additional hardware at it really didn't solve the problem, but it allowed us to see what the real problem really was.
Yeah, in my experience, you know, as a consultant prior to VMware, I certainly remember there were times when we would look at an issue with a customer that would have a performance issue with SQL, and it would basically be they'd have some older servers that they were running SQL on, and they'd have some newer servers running some of their other workloads. And so it was just a matter of, hey, that server doesn't even have the ability to support secondary level address translation, or it doesn't have the ability to support multiple processors. And so it was a matter of just making sure that their SQL or their primary workloads were on the best servers that they had. So repurposing old hardware is not a good plan for your SQL Server workloads.
No, I don't think that's ever worked out well for anyone. It certainly has really good intentions. You know, initially you think that you're being very fiscally responsible in an organization, but it just always seems to come back and haunt you later on.
Agreed. What are some of the things that you think we need to be considering when we're virtualizing SQL Server, since we know we've got adequate performance on, you know, our servers and also on our storage?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. What it really comes down to is once you make that transition over to a virtualized SQL environment, it really comes down to using that control plane, that being vCenter, to really better understand the needs of the application itself. So oftentimes, these applications, whether it be SQL Server or some front-end services that were needing SQL Server,
yeah,
ran in a vacuum. You simply couldn't see the data. So what I generally see is the advantage from once you virtualize that SQL cluster, you have the visibility to really understand what are the demands on that and for the specific applications that are using the SQL Server. And then from there, you can tweak and tune in accordance to whatever given needs are for those applications. One of the things that comes up quite often is, you know, how many virtual CPUs do I need for a SQL Server? How many or how much virtual memory would that SQL Server really need?
Yeah.
You really don't know until you move that to that virtualized environment where you have that common control plane so that you can measure everything in the same way.
So Pete, we know SQL Server has different workloads, right? Like OLTP versus reporting and data warehouse, all that. And we know SQL Server itself has its own resource governing utilities built in. But what about VMware? Is there anything inside of a VMware environment that enhances that management?
Yeah, well, the first part on that is really to recognize that when you look at the IO characteristics of a SQL Server, those characteristics are really going to change based off of the actual needs at any given time within the SQL Server. So if it's doing some sort of a re-indexing process, or if it's using tempdb quite a bit, the actual IO characteristics and the block sizes being used and things of that nature are really going to change and vary dramatically. Now, when that is running within vSAN, we really get to take advantage of that granular level of being able to apply protection policies in the way that's going to be most efficient for that SQL Server. So we could use storage policy-based management to assign, you know, a level of failures to tolerate for your transaction logs that may be different than for tempdb. And what that's going to do is that then we can really craft this arrangement in such a way that we can deliver the most efficient and the most performance-based system that we can offer running on vSAN.
Wait a minute. So you're saying I don't put my operating system, my application, and my TempTB all on the same disk?
No. And you know what's
But it's a VM. I can just throw memory at it.
What's fascinating about that, Pete, is that we still get asked that very question, and that the principles of good application design are still there regardless of what the underlying infrastructure is. It's just how are you going to craft the configuration of the application in the way that's going to be the most manageable for your organization. And that's really what running SQL on vSAN really does, courtesy of storage policy-based management.
All right. So I've got my SQL server inside a virtual machine now, and I've separated my operating system, my application, and my TempDB because I want to keep my job. And I'm using storage policy-based management for things like availability and perhaps even some performance. But what else, Pete? Is there something else I need to consider from a performance perspective?
Yeah, Pete, there's a couple of things that I would focus in on initially. One would be understanding from a memory requirements, once you virtualize any SQL server, whether it's running on vSAN or not, is looking at how you understand how much memory it really needs. And do you do that using the active memory metric within vCenter, or do you use some other form of measurement? That's going to be something that you'll want to look at very closely so that we don't necessarily starve the specific VM with resources. The modern versions of SQL Server and Exchange use the memory in the guest quite a bit to reduce the overall amount of I/O that's being transacted back and forth. So that's one of the things that I would really focus on. The other part, once you begin to virtualize SQL servers, and especially if it's a larger SQL server farm that's serving up a number of different applications, is that then you get to ask yourself, if you're running multiple vSAN clusters or one single vSAN cluster, will it make most sense for you to carve out a smaller cluster that is completely isolated and completely self-contained for those SQL services? And what that will really prevent is to ensure a level of service that is not going to be interfered with maybe some other noisy applications within the same environment.
Sure.
And that's one of the areas of tremendous flexibility that running SQL on vSAN really has over, maybe other solutions where you might be funneling all of that storage traffic to a single point.
Yeah, that's the beauty of virtual infrastructure, right? I mean, you're pooling all your resources and taking advantage of all these great features that are inside there, like allocating resources as needed and non-disruptively migrating and HA, et cetera. But in some cases where you want to dedicate a very specific, say, even a cluster or like a vSAN cluster for a SQL server, you have that flexibility. And so you're ensuring that all your workloads are getting exactly what they need. It makes sense to me. All right, Pete. Yeah, so it seems to me, I don't know, like there was a time, not too long ago, actually, that SQL Server was kind of considered the too resource intensive for virtualized environments. I don't think you're going to hear a lot of people say that these days. But in your opinion, do you think that it's a one for one? Like there's SQL Server is perfectly fit for a workload? And if so, are there any key recommendations that you think people need to consider that might possibly still be on the fence? You know, for those hard to convince guys, is there anything that you think that we need to point out about virtualizing SQL Server that we may have missed?
Well, I think really what it comes down to is that with the advancements in the modern hardware and the flexibility of virtualization, the great news is that it's really easy for one to be able to experiment to see if running SQL in their environment is going to be a good fit for them. And once you can satisfy that performance requirement, whatever that might be, then it really all becomes about manageability and the agility of that management. How are you able to provide that ongoing maintenance of those services that SQL offers up to your organization? So I think that's really one of the key benefits around looking into this. And you can simply try this out and see how it runs in your environment, whether it's just virtualized in a traditional three-tier architecture or virtualized using vSAN.
Absolutely. And you can even use storage policy-based management to, configure a SQL Server workload, maybe if it's in test and dev, to be on a certain type of storage, or move it to production. You know, you just change a quick SPBM policy and you can have it configured to a more performance-centric policy.
Yeah, Pete, that sounds like a good plan for anybody that is looking into virtualizing SQL Server, whether it be in a traditional three-tier architecture or on vSAN.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome, man. Sounds good. All right. Well, listen, thanks for being a co-host. Now your fourth term on the podcast. I really appreciate you, buddy.
Oh, thank you, Pete, for having me, and look forward to it. Anytime you need some help, just let me know.
Sounds good. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to my good friend Pete Keeler for joining us this week. That was a lot of fun. Until next week, bye for now.
I just had an amazing breakfast with some dosa, some potatoes, some lassi. It was good. It was pretty decadent stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Enough of this jibber jabber.